Welcome to this week's episode of the Blue Box Podcast. Brought to you by Starburst Magazine, the world's longest-running magazine of fantastic films and television.
Hello and welcome back to the Blue Box Podcast. We are very happy to be back after a little break over the Christmas holidays. How was everyone's Christmas? Did you have a nice Christmas, Kieran?
It was pretty good, yeah. A lot of travelling around. I went down to Cheshire to see my parents, then up to Redcar to see my partner's parents. So feels like I spent most of the Christmas break in a car, really. But I had nice bits of Christmas in between that, and it is always a bit tiring doing a whole week's worth of family, so
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the rest of getting back to work.
Definitely. Yeah, I was saying, I feel like it always feels like a bit of a weird void in that period between Christmas and New Year. That kind of week between Christmas and New Year is always a really strange feeling. You kind of feel like you're, well, unless you are actually going back to work, but I feel like a lot of people have that time off, so it kind of feels like a strange time warp, like just this week where you don't really have anything to do, where you're just kind of waiting for the new year. But no, yeah, I'll be glad to get back into a routine. Christmas was nice though. It was a nice break, despite me having a weird funny turn halfway through Christmas Day and not being able to eat my Christmas dinner. So I had a stomach bug or something for a couple of days, which was a bit weird.
There's definitely a Doctor Who story in there. The character has a weird funny turn on Christmas Day, then spends a week in a time warp.
I think we should write it, you know. I think that's a great script idea right there. Well, whatever you got up to over the holidays, hope you had a lovely Christmas holiday, and thank you for joining us as we get back into the swing of things. But we're rounding off Christmas in style, finishing off the Christmas celebrations with sharing our thoughts on The Church on Ruby Road. So this is your final Christmas port of call before you get back into reality. We have a nice Christmas-themed episode for you. Should we start off, as usual, with kind of initial thoughts and marks out of 10 for The Church on Ruby Road?
Okay, so I thought it was a lot of fun overall. I really love Shuti Getwa's performance as the Doctor so far. Mm. I liked meeting Ruby. I think her as a character was very well suited to this particular story. I'm yet to have much of an opinion on how she's going to be as a companion long term, but and obviously she has big shoes to fill coming after Donna, but so far it's a good start. The goblins were a lot of fun. It just had a bit of everything, really. A bit of comedy, a bit of action, a bit of a dark emotional story, and some music. So I think it's kind of what I wanted from a Christmas special. It's not a perfect episode, but 8 out of 10.
Cool. Yeah. I would mostly agree. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good episode. I'm not knocking it necessarily, but I gave it a lower mark just because I definitely felt it was the weakest out of the episodes that we've seen so far. Like, you know, the three 60th anniversaries and then this. I think out of all of those four episodes, I felt that this was like the weakest. Not necessarily saying it was a bad episode, but I gave it like a 6.5 out of 10 just because I felt like the other episodes were definitely better, and I only gave the Star Beast like 7 out of 10, and I definitely thought this was worse. I didn't dislike it, but I wasn't kind of massively enamored with it either. I definitely think there's been better Christmas specials. I did think it was a really good way to introduce Ruby. I did really like kind of what we saw of her. But actually, in some ways, again, I didn't know whether a Christmas episode might actually not be the best like episode to introduce a companion on, to be honest, for that reason, because I kind of felt like we learned a little bit about her, but because the episode wasn't sort of entirely dedicated to her, like, for example, Rose or The Runaway Bride, where it's kind of obviously there is an alien, but it's like, or a monster or whatever, but it's kind of much more dedicated to kind of introducing the companion. And for some reason, I kind of felt like this didn't necessarily get the balance quite right for me. I kind of wanted to see more. In some ways, I think I kind of wished it was longer, because I wanted more of the goblins. I wanted more like fleshing out of their kind of lore. And
I think the goblins were quite simple, but it was kind of like, they're a simple concept. You sort of instinctively got what they were and what they were doing. I thought, if anything felt a little bit rushed to me, it was the last few scenes, the kind of ending.
Yeah.
It's sort of, we didn't get a proper her first having a look around the TARDIS scene.
Yeah.
It cut off a little bit abruptly. Although maybe that's all going to be picked on if the next episode does continue directly.
Yeah.
I thought with Ruby, it worked well in that with her backstory being tied well into Christmas, her having been found on Christmas. Quite a good little dynamic, I thought, in that it ties the character and the purpose of having a Christmas special well together quite well. And I imagine that's going to be relevant in the next Christmas special as well. And as long as she's in the show and they're doing Christmas specials, then that's going to be a kind of continuing element of her storyline, I think.
Yeah,
which is nice.
Yeah, that is nice.
Because I did often feel like when Russell T. Davies did Christmas specials in his first era, it felt like a little bit contrived how the Earth got invaded every Christmas day. It just became a little bit more unlikely as it went on. So I think maybe they're doing a bit of a twist on that. And it also felt it wasn't doing like an invasion story. It was more, it felt like a Stephen Moffat episode in a way, in that it was kind of that the enemies were not necessarily an invasion force, but a kind of fairy tale-esque ethereal force that had their whole goals and raison d'etre was built around the companion story.
Yeah.
And that kind of fairy tale-esque element to it.
Definitely.
I think that's a nice way in which Russell T. Davies has sort of picked up on the styles of the what originally came after him in the last era.
I would definitely agree with that. I think in some ways I definitely think it makes more sense than a lot of Christmas episodes do, because as you say, it is actually tied into Christmas with Ruby's birthday and everything, and goblins kind of feel like an inherently Christmassy villain, I guess, because like I remember it reminded me a bit of I don't know if anyone read the Rainbow Magic books when they were a kid, like growing up. I was obsessed with the Rainbow Magic fairy stories, you know, with Rachel and Kirsty, and they had to like help save all the rainbow fairies from Jack Frost, and I was obsessed with them when I was growing up, these books. And they, like, the villain was always Jack Frost and his goblins, and like, you know, Santa has elves, Jack Frost has goblins. So to me, like, goblins kind of felt
an evil twist on Santa.
Cool. So it kind of felt quite goblins felt like quite an inherently Christmassy villain. But yeah, I really enjoyed the first half, or the first kind of two-thirds of the episode, but I would agree with you. I definitely felt like the ending, kind of the later half of the episode and the ending was quite sort of rushed. And the whole idea of like, of Ruby, I felt like they only got to the punchline of Ruby being erased from existence. I felt like they only got to that quite late. And actually that should have happened kind of a little bit earlier in the episode, and it should have been harder for the Doctor to have to like get her back. You know, that kind of seemed to happen quite quickly.
I think the risk there is that if you have her out of the story for too much of the episode, then she's missing out when a lot of the point of the episode is to introduce the new companion. I felt it was risky enough having the whole climax without her in it, except as a baby.
Like
I thought it did work, because It always felt quite fast-paced, which is kind of what you want from this kind of adventure. Like at no point did it feel like it was getting sluggish.
Yeah,
like you wanted to turn over.
Yeah,
or fast
I think
forward.
It was definitely it was definitely very fast-paced. But I actually think that's kind of been one of my slight criticisms of all of the episodes in a way that we've seen so far, like the all of the 60th episodes, apart from maybe Wild Blue Yonder, but all of the Christmas, all of the anniversary episodes, and then this Christmas episode. I think an overriding potential slight criticism that I've had of all of them has been that I've kind of felt like they're a little bit rushed in the plot, and they could almost have done with being a bit longer. I don't know whether that's just me, but I think we did have a few other comments saying that on some of the other episodes, and I definitely felt like this one I kind of wanted, perhaps. I don't know what necessarily I would want to see more of, but I kind of felt like, for example, I guess we see a little bit about Ruby in terms of, like, you know, she's we see that she's, I think, in like a band with her friends, and we see them doing like a Christmas performance, and then we see them in a taxi on the way home from the club on her birthday or whatever, or like the day before her birthday, and she's obviously gone out with them to a club for her birthday or whatever. And I kind of, we see a little bit of her kind of interacting with her friends in the back of a taxi, but I almost kind of wanted to see more of that, because it's a bit like, you know, when you see, for example, I keep kind of going back to it, but like Rose, when we're first introduced to Rose, like way back when, it felt a lot more, her character kind of felt a lot more rounded, because we find out more about her life, but it doesn't feel kind of quite as rushed as just like a quick snapshot of her in a club with her friends. Like, if you're going to show her friends, then I kind of want to actually meet them and find out a little bit more about them. Like, it's all right if you just reference her friends. Like, you know, Rose, I remember, used to reference Shireen, her mate Shireen, all the time, but we never actually saw Shireen, so it didn't really matter. But if we're actually going to see her friends, then I kind of want to almost meet them and see a bit more about them and her band that she's in or whatever. I don't know.
Maybe we will.
Yeah. But yeah.
I think if they're not necessary to the story, then you don't necessarily need to spend that much more time with them. I think those scenes they served the purpose they were there for. I personally didn't feel we needed more of that, but it would be nice to have more of an idea of who she is, like what her as a rounded person, as you say. Like, I think the one thing that I wasn't convinced by at the end is the fact that she goes off to join the Doctor, and it's quite clearly seems to be because she wants to go back in time and find out who her mum is. And
yeah, that was interesting.
It's
actually
not because she wants to go all around time and space visiting different places. But we know that the next series is going to be them going all around time and space.
Well, she might do. She might want to see that as well, though, because she mentions, I think there's a bit where she kind of mentions, oh, like when she's realizing that he's a time traveler. There's a bit where she mentions, oh, he spoke about Houdini. When was Houdini? Wasn't that 1920s or something? And then she kind of, you can see that she's realised that he's a time traveller. And yeah, I think definitely her main motivation is obviously like she wants to go back and find out who her mum is or whatever. But I do also think that there was definitely that kind of element of excitement of like, because you could put of being able to see different eras as well, because with the thing about Houdini, I don't think it's necessarily just about that, because you could almost say that for Rose as well, because you could argue that perhaps Rose's motivation was that she wanted to see her dad, because we had that, you know, in Father's Day we had that whole scene of the Doctor saying, oh, is this what it's all been about the whole time, is, you know, is this why you said yes to traveling with me? I said space and you said no, I said time and you said yes, so has this been what it's been about the whole time, that you wanted to see your dad? So I feel like that is always a motivation if it's a character that's lost a parent, but it might not necessarily be like the only motivation. I think anyone's going to be excited to have the opportunity to travel in time, so I'm hoping she's not going to be like, the first thing she says is like, can we go and see my mum? I think she's still going to be like excited to, you know,
yeah,
so go on adventures.
I mean, the impression I got from it was that she wanted to go and find her mum straight away, but I guess that is inevitably going to come up, and that we'll find out who she is probably in the next series finale. Yeah, there's definitely a lot more to learn about Ruby, I think. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, I'm kind of intrigued actually, because perhaps she is actually going to go and try and find out more about her past in the very first episode of the next series, because I think we're going to go into a bit later on, we're going to have a little exploration of the news of the trailer for the new series and kind of some of the things in the trailer that we know are going to and what we know is going to be happening in the next series. But I think it's been confirmed that the first episode of the new series is surrounding babies and extraterrestrial babies, and they're going to be investigating something to do with that. So maybe they are going to deal with Ruby's past quite early on. Maybe that's going to be tied into that and her wanting to investigate. And
I mean, if the episode is about babies, it was probably going to be at least mentioned. I heard that rumor going around somewhere. I think it's set on a space station though.
Okay.
Yeah, because they've showed a few clips of that episode and them running around being chased by some kind of monster on a space station.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So maybe we are gonna get to talking about that sooner than we think. But I would have thought that it would be something kind of they save for a bit later in Ruby's journey. I would have thought that would be kind of towards the end of her time as a companion. They kind of wrap up her story by revealing the truth about her parents or something, you know. So yeah. I'd be surprised if we find out the whole story kind of straight away, but maybe it will be kind of...
Yeah, there's no way it'll all be wrapped up straight away, but it's definitely going to be a recurring element of the story, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So normally we have a guest and we put our guest to the test of their knowledge of Doctor Who. Today we are going to be sticking closer to home and we're going to be putting Kieran to the test on his knowledge. So how closely did you watch the episode? It is time for this.
It's time for the Blue Box Quiz.
I love that intro so much. Yes, we're going to be testing your own knowledge today. So, are you ready? How closely have you been paying attention? Question numero uno, question number one. It's a fairly obvious one, I think. But, well, actually, maybe not as obvious as you'd think. What do the goblins feed on?
Babies. Oh, and coincidence.
Correct.
Babies/coincidence.
Correct. Yes, we discover that they kind of feed on the language of luck and chance and coincidence, is the way the Doctor describes it, that it's a kind of language to them, which I thought was quite interesting. And it's like the energy from people being woven into the day through coincidence. Mm. Apparently they kind of feed on some sort of time energy to do with bad luck and something along those lines, which I thought was quite intriguing.
I think at one point, like me a few years ago, would have kind of objected to so much fantasy element being brought into it. I think I originally liked it being a lot more of a sci-fi show, but I'm definitely warming to it. And I did think, you know, the whole mythology around the goblins was quite fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that you should say that. It seems to be going more towards a kind of fantasy element, because my mum was actually saying that to me the other day, and she was kind of saying how it felt a bit too kind of almost fairy tale for her now, and she wasn't necessarily enjoying that dynamic. So that's quite interesting. I definitely think it has got a little bit more fantasy, but I mean, I guess because in this the goblins aren't meant to be like a mythical creature. They're obviously meant to just be like another alien species.
Yeah.
So I guess it's still kind of sci-fi in that sense. It's not
aliens who kind of work on a different science you know, any sufficiently advanced technology indistinguishable from magic, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think there was always an element of fantasy from time to time. Like I mentioned, it's sort of a Stephen Moffat kind of style in The Weeping Angels. You know, they're a fantasy villain whose powers are never really explained, but just hand-waved away as, oh, they're super powerful aliens.
Yeah.
And, you know, even looking right back to well, the toy maker in the last episode and in the William Hartnell era.
Yeah.
And things like the mind rubber as well. There was always a kind of,
mm.
especially in those very early Hartnell and Troughton days, you got a few fantasy kind of villains.
Yeah, well, it feels very fantasy, but I think it's because it's almost meant to be the science that we don't understand yet.
Yes.
Because it's like, the toy maker is not meant to be necessarily a fantasy kind of villain. It's just that he's from kind of the edge or beyond the known universe where the laws of physics are different, and you know, he's kind of a sort of celestial being, so he's not tied to the physics of our reality, but he's still kind of scientific. He's just following a different set of rules, which I quite like. It's kind of pushing the boundaries of sort of it's kind of blurring the edges between sci-fi and fantasy, but you can kind of still categorize it as sci-fi, and he is just another species that we don't quite understand enough about if you want to view him in that way. Like, you don't necessarily have to view him as a kind of fantastical being.
Yeah. And I like how it is representative of Russell T. Davies trying different things to what he did in his first era, because, you know, I said earlier how every Christmas special back then was an invasion, alien invasion, and there were a lot of kind of, not always in bad ways, but there were a lot of repeated tropes, and just there's a lot of signs that this era already is in its villains, for example, just going into new territory, which is exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say the only thing which I'm a little bit concerned about is the kind of, I do think we're seeing some sort of like Disneyfication creeping in a little bit with the villains, just with like the musical numbers, because like, don't get me wrong, I loved Neil Patrick Harris as the toy maker. I loved the musical number. I loved him dancing to the Spice Girls. I thought it was the best part of the episode. But that's kind of the limit for me of how silly you can go. And I feel like if you do that with every single villain, if you have every single villain having a musical number, because like, we've had Neil Patrick Harris do a musical number, we've had the goblins do a musical number, we're probably going to have Jinx Monsoon do a musical number when she's the villain. I just don't want to start getting into this kind of strange, not really very realistic, because it's more like a musical idea of every single villain having a musical number, because it worked for the toy maker because it wasn't a musical number. He was actually playing the Spice Girls in the background, and then he was just mouthing along to it and then just being a bit silly because that's the kind of villain that he is. So it worked for him because it wasn't actually a musical number. He wasn't just bursting into song. It worked for the goblins because, yes, they were bursting into song, but like, they're goblins. It kind of worked. Like, it might just be that they are a silly alien. Like, it just about worked for them, but it's kind of pushing the boundaries for me of what I can like deal with. And then if it keeps going down that route, I just don't want it to get silly. Like, I liked, for example, in this episode, one of the main parts that I didn't like in this episode was the Doctor and Ruby singing. Not because they can't sing, because I thought they were very good singers. They did a very good job. Props to the actors. So, like, not because they can't sing, but the goblin. So, how I would have wanted it to go is like, if they're going to sing, it needs to be without a backing track as a distraction and a really funny moment to try and get away from the goblins. So, the goblins have done their musical number. They're allowed to sing. They've got a band, so they're playing a backing track. But they're not going to randomly start playing for the humans that are invading their ship. So they wouldn't play music.
Why would they not? Because that's the Doctor told them to. They're a band. That's what they do. Like,
no, no,
I thought it was clear that the Doctor and Ruby are kind of riffing. They're sort of making it up as a distraction.
But they're not, because it was too perfect. They needed to, if it's like,
nice to diddly deet you. It's not a line you'd write in advance.
It sounded really good. So basically, if they're going to do that, it needed to be a lot more like awkward. So it needed to be a lot more like the Doctor kind of goes, because the Doctor's thinking on his feet. He's like, how are we gonna get out of this? How are we gonna, like, you know, I need to do a distraction. Right, I'm gonna sing. Because the Doctor would do something like that. So like, that's all right. So the Doctor just kind of goes, the Goblin King, like, kind of really awkwardly with no music in the background. And then he's just kind of there, like, take it away, Ruby. And then Ruby's just there, like...
That's what Matt Smith's nice Doctor would have done.
Meet you, nice to deedly-deet you. So it needed to be a lot more kind of juddery and awkward.
No,
like
I get that, yeah. A couple of moments of a bit more, like, to make it obvious that they're kind of riffing.
Because it didn't seem like they it didn't seem like they were kind of awkwardly making it up on the spot as a diversion to try and get away at all. It just looked like they were suddenly, it's a musical, we're singing, it's all rehearsed, we're all perfect. It's all, you know, it didn't seem like they were kind of going, what the fuck, we're on a goblin ship. Like, how is it? It was like Ruby needed to be like, looking at him like, why the heck are you asking me to sing? What the hell? And she needed to just be there, like, suddenly going, nice to meet you, deedly deet you, like, just really, like, awkwardly with no music in the background. Yeah. That's the only way that could have worked.
Yeah, I get that. Like, overall, I really like the musical number. And I think I like Doctor Who to be silly. I think it's a silly show, and I'm excited for more silliness, personally. My one issue with the musical number is it had a... What my little pet hate occasionally about songwriting is lines that have nonsense grammar in order to force rhymes, like, and now the baby we will eat. It's just not, that's not the way you'd ever say that sentence. It's now we will eat the baby, but that doesn't rhyme. Other than
but
that.
But then it's like, they're goblins. Like, does that matter? I don't
know. Goblin grammar, yeah.
Yeah. I feel, the thing is, I feel like we have, I feel like we actually kind of differ on this, because I'm getting the sense from like various things that you've said that you kind of view Doctor Who as quite a like silly show, and like that's one of the things that you quite enjoy about the show. And like, I know a lot of people that is kind of how they view one of my friends, I was talking about it to one of my friends, and he was like, he kind of would like agree with you, and he was just kind of like, oh, but you know, like Doctor Who's a silly show, like of course they can have goblins, it's a silly show. And I was,
it is, but I wouldn't say silly in such a disparaging kind of way.
That's what I mean.
I think silly is a positive, and I think what Doctor Who can do really well is mix silly and serious.
Yeah,
like, we do have the silliness of having goblins doing a musical number, but we've also got the kind of serious, like, story of you know, this family who foster lots of babies, and then what happens if the daughter's ripped out of that. And I think it got quite dark at that point, and the fact and the way that the episode can balance that darkness and the more camp moments.
See, I think to me, like, the balance is feeling off at the moment. I think that would kind of be my overriding criticism of the new stuff, is that I think my ratio of how much tragedy to humour I want is a lot more, is probably, I think you probably, from the sounds of it, your ratio is a bit more like 50-50, or you kind of want more humour. You're not as concerned about getting the tragedy in there all of the time by the sounds of it. But for me, I'm feeling like the ratio is off at the moment, because to me, Doctor Who is actually a very serious show, and they're putting a little bit too much silliness in it at the moment. I'm not saying it can't be silly, and it is sometimes my absolute favourite thing when Doctor Who gets silly, because I, you know, as I say, I loved Neil Patrick Harris. I loved the musical number in that episode. But to me, I tend to enjoy it a lot more when it goes a lot more adult and dark, and it explores really dark themes. And I don't want too much humour in there. I need the humour to be incidental rather than... To me, it's kind of, it's not a comedy show. It's like, it's, yes, it ends up being a kind of comedy show because the situation is so humorous, and it kind of, the situational humour comes naturally, but I don't want it to kind of be written to be a very light-hearted, humorous show. I want it to be quite tragic and quite dark, which is, and I feel like it was a lot more in the earlier days of the reboot. It was still quirky, and it was still silly, and it still had all of that stuff in there that we love and we need occasionally. But I think the ratio of humor to tragedy has definitely tipped a bit too far towards humor for me. And like, I'm like, the whole, that's kind of, again, that was why I didn't like Bi-Generation, because I'm just a bit like, no, you're going too much towards the happy ending. You're totally negating that whole lovely speech that David Tennant did about regeneration being a kind of death, and you know, even if I change it, you know, it's I still die, and a new man goes walking away, and I'm dead, you know. And bigeneration kind of got rid of that kind of sense of tragedy for me, and it's like, you know, you can't sort of undo the seriousness too much, and I feel like they're kind of going a little bit too. I mean, it's probably just me personally, but I sort of don't like Doctor Who to be viewed as a kind of humorous show. I'm a bit like no, I don't like the fun. Like, no, it's a very serious show, guys. Like, I don't know. I'm just kind of very like protective of it in that sense. I don't know. Just like don't get too silly with it. Like, I don't know. I'm just sort of. You've still got to keep it very scientific and very like, this is actually happening. It's got to be realistic, you know.
You're reminding me of the Arrested Development gag of the all the wizards in their silly costumes holding up the sign, "We demand to be taken seriously."
Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of people probably won't agree. A lot of people will probably prefer it to be funny. And like, that is how a lot of people view it. Like, some people do view it as just a very silly show. I get that. But like, that's why I don't want to give them too much fuel to believe that, because I want them to remember that it's actually very dark and serious. Yeah. Like,
I think a good thing about Doctor Who is that it can change, like, episode by episode, and sometimes within episodes. Yeah. And, you know, every episode of the next coming up season, I'm sure, will have a slightly different tone and slightly different balance. And don't forget the one we're talking about is a Christmas special, which is
always
lean to more away from, you know, the darker issues.
Oh, no, definitely. Like, they're all, they're always a lot more lighthearted, the Christmas specials anyway. But, yeah, no. Question number two. What is the name of the other one of Ruby's neighbours that we meet that Mrs. Flood is arguing with at the start of the episode? They only mention his name briefly, so it is quite a tricky one.
Oh, right at the end. Is it Abdul?
It is yes. Abdul, who I don't think we're going to see that much more of, but I just thought that was an interesting question to throw in there. He seems to have a love-hate relationship with Mrs. Flood, so...
Yeah, and it is nice that there's kind of a sense of the community. Like, you know, we've met Ruby and her family, and we've met a couple of her neighbours.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if Abdul will recur, but obviously there's at least four recurring characters there, including Ruby.
Yeah.
Which is, it does... You know, I like the idea that there is going to be some continuity and some ongoing story there.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice when you kind of have a bit more of the companion's family, because I think that definitely makes it more realistic. I think that's definitely something. I think we've mentioned before, but I think that's definitely something that Russell T. Davis used to do really well. So I hope he kind of continues with that, of like giving the family of the companion a bit more of a role, and kind of making us quite attached to the family as well. You know, like we got very attached to Jackie Tyler and Mickey, and you know, and then like we saw a lot of Martha's family. We didn't get quite as attached to them, but we saw quite a lot of them. And then, you know, Donna, obviously we got the wonderful Wilf and Sylvia and everything. So, and then that was kind of lost a little bit in Stephen Moffat's era. He wasn't as concerned with showing us the companions' families. So I kind of felt that was lost a little bit. So I hope Russell T. Davis kind of brings that back, because I do really enjoy when we see a bit more of the companions' kind of real life, because I think it makes it more realistic, definitely, if there's that kind of sense of community. I hope we see more of Cherry as well, because Cherry was
lovely.
Great.
Yeah, what a great subplot, just wanting a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Very relatable character.
Honestly, that was stressing me out the whole episode, though. I was literally, like, the whole time I was watching it, I was just there like, can somebody get this woman a cup of tea? Like, please, somebody get her a cuppa. Like, so I thought she was a great character, so I hope we see a bit more of her, because I think she'll definitely have that comedy element, I think. So that would be quite nice to see some more of her. Question number three. What does the Doctor use to help him and Ruby hold on to the ladder when they're hanging off the goblin ship?
It's his special glove, which I can't remember if it had a specific name, but it's a glove that does science.
Yes, I'm going to give you that. It does have a particular name, but I don't know whether that is actually the very scientific particular name, or whether that's just what the doctor called them. But apparently they're called intelligent gloves. So I'll give you the point anyway, because yeah, it was gloves, but
smart gloves,
intelligent gloves. They're called so, which I thought was quite nice, because I've seen quite a lot of comments with people saying like, oh, I didn't really like the gloves because, you know, the doctor shouldn't have technology to help him out all the time, and he shouldn't be kind of going around like Batman or whatever. But I was just a bit like, well, he's always invented things. Yeah. He's always like occasionally used like a random gadget or something to help him out. So I felt like that
I do get that criticism sometimes. Like, often, you know, them giving the sonic screwdriver too many abilities can be a little bit annoying. And if he is just using gadgets to solve a situation, it can feel a little bit of a cheat. But I didn't feel that in this episode. I felt like its use was, you know, restrained to what that glove would be able to do. And you know, he had to use a bit of intellect as well. And
I mean, he's always kind of like come out with random machines and implements, and it, like, who can forget the infamous machine that goes ding?
Oh yeah,
that was one of my favorite inventions. Yes. So I feel like he's always got one or two tricks up his sleeve. So yeah, quite liked the gloves. Question number four. We're on a roll so far. You've got 3 out of 3, I think, so far, which is very impressive. Question number four. Who does the doctor say he has spent a summer with and learnt his lockpicking abilities from?
That was Harry Houdini.
It was Harry
Houdini.
A hot,
steaming summer.
Yeah, I was like, the subtext behind that was quite interesting, actually. So
Especially when you consider that he's referenced Harry Houdini many times before. I think the first time he was referenced was by Jumper Twee's doctor. So,
really?
Maybe Jumper Twee spent the hot, steamy summer with Harry Houdini.
Interesting. I didn't realise that. I didn't realise Houdini had been mentioned quite a lot before. Interesting.
I guess it's the obvious guy to reference when the doctor's escaping from summer, which he often has to do.
No, that's a very interesting one. Yeah, I mean, who are we to judge? We don't know what went on between John Pertwee's doctor and Harry Houdini. It's what happens in the hot, steamy summer stays in the hot, steamy summer. We shall never know. That's quite an image. But yeah, I will have to look out for more references of Houdini now, actually. Has there been any more in the modern, like in the reboot?
Probably.
I think so.
I can't bring to mind any particular ones.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I think it's quite nice as well when you get those little, like, snippets of information about stuff that the doctor's been up to, you know, people that he's met, like historical figures that he's met. Like, I remember in Vampires of Venice when they turn up and he's like, I think he mentions, what's it called? Oh, is it? No, not Galileo. Who's the Italian inventor? God, I've had a complete
mind. I don't
know.
Da Vinci?
Da Vinci, I think. I think it might have been Da Vinci or someone of that ilk. And they turn up and he mentions that he wouldn't want to bump into him or something. It's quite funny when you get those little snippets, because I feel like there's a whole sub-series, isn't there, really, in stuff that the Doctor's got up to, like, that we don't see on the screen.
It's nice that it expands the universe. It gives you the idea that there's so much more going on that you're not seeing outside the episodes.
Definitely. Because one of my favourite things that they ever did, actually, was during Matt Smith's era, they had those little short extra scenes called, like, Night and the Doctor, where they kind of basically explore what the Doctor gets up to at night. So it's this idea that he's got, like, a whole life alongside, you know, during the day with his companions. So I thought that was...
Yeah, I really loved that series. I remember just watching those on YouTube or wherever it was, and it felt like that was the best scripts that Stephen Moffat was writing at that era. They were just such lovely little scenes.
They were really cool, yeah.
And, you know, giving us a bit more River Song and a bit more depth to the relationship between him and River.
No, it was nice to kind of see that kind of, because that was one thing that did frustrate me about River's story, that we didn't actually get to see more of her, to be honest. I felt like there was a whole spin-off series there of the adventures of the Doctor and River. So it's quite nice when they fill in little bits and pieces like that. Question number 5. What is you may not remember this because again it was only mentioned once in the episode, but what is the name of the singing goblin? Like the goblin that sings the song is actually named.
I don't remember it referenced in the episode, but I think I remember someone's talking about it on one of the behind the scenes. Janice Goblin.
It is Janice Goblin. Yeah, well, funny enough, it is actually referenced in the episode once because the doctor actually says, "Take it away, Janice."
Right.
Before he starts singing. So that's where it's mentioned. But yeah, I just thought that was quite amusing that the goblin has a name apparently. Oh, I found out a really interesting thing as well watching Doctor Who Unleashed. Apparently, one of the stunt people or like extra people playing the goblins, she actually also played Poe in the Teletubbies.
That's an amazing CV.
Which is a little, yeah. I mean, can you imagine that CV? That is such a cool CV. So, what have you done in your life? I played Poe in the Teletubbies, and I was a goblin on Doctor Who. Like, that is a hell of a CV. Like, I just thought that was really sweet because I was like looking at her in this full like goblin costume, and I was just like, that's so weird because like Poe was my childhood, man. Like, I loved the Teletubbies when I was little. They were great. Mm. So I just thought that was a really interesting little throwback for those of us who are old enough to remember the Teletubbies.
Yeah. And I saw that interview as well. And I just thought, you know, we talked about this a bit with Beep the Meep in the Star Beast, but it's great that they're doing all of this practically. Like, all the goblin costumes are real. And the Goblin King, it's a massive puppet. And it looks so much cooler than the CGI version probably would.
100%, 100%, and I think it's probably definitely a lot easier for the actors as well if they've got that kind of, you know, that physical being in front of them to react to. Like I I remember Shooty Gatwood was actually talking about it on Doctor Who Unleashed again. He was saying how like everyone seemed to think that the Goblin King was really cute. And then he was just there, like, really being really freaked out by it because it was, like, it's quite lifelike, actually, when you look at it. It's a really, really cool figurine that they've got, that they've built. So Janice the Singing Goblin. We shall remember her. Question number six, I think, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, question number six. Who does Ruby say... Again, this is quite obscure, and I just thought I'd throw this in here because I thought it was a little bit of a backstory to the companion, but it's not really that important in the grand scheme of things. But who does Ruby say has asked her out when she's chatting to her friends?
Oh, it was... I don't know. There's something about a dentist. Was it a dentist?
No. No, not a dentist. Well, okay. he might be. I don't know. But it was just a very obscure name. But I just thought I'd put it in there. Bobby McGeeves.
Bobby McGeeves.
Okay. Is it McGeever? McGeever or McGeeves. I can't remember which. McGeeves. But yeah, I just thought that was an interesting one to throw in there because it kind of gave a little bit of... It kind of reminded me of Rose. Like with Rose, it was always... Jimmy Stone. She would always talk about Jimmy Stone that she dated, and then it all ended badly, and she left school because of him, apparently. So I just thought that I think that's quite nice when they put sort of a little snippet of information about the companion in there. So that's
and Donna's friend Neris, one of the greatest characters we'll ever meet.
Well, did we not see her at the wedding? I think we saw her in Runaway Bride.
Oh, maybe we did.
I think she is briefly shown in The Runaway Bride.
Oh, that's kind of disappointing in a way if she is.
Yeah. I think it would be better in some ways if she wasn't, if she just kind of stayed like anonymous, because good old Neris.
Yeah. It's kind of like there's a great comedy tradition of characters who you never actually see. Like, what's it called? Niles' wife in Frasier, Maris, who's like, you never actually see her on screen. And just every time they reference it, they come up with some of the bizarre illness that she's got, to the point where they could never actually have the character because she'd just be too unbelievable if you actually saw her.
Yeah. I love that when they were talking about Nerys in the Star Beast, though. Just that bit of dialogue between the Doctor and Sean was, I genuinely think, was just like one of the best parts of the script.
Yeah.
When he's like, "How's Nerys? Oh, she's fine. But she had that accident, didn't she? She's not fine. Well, she won this. Like, she's been fine." I thought that was great, that little exchange. Just, love Nerys. Gotta love Nerys. Cool. Question number 7. Again, quite an obscure one. I try to find, like, fairly difficult questions because I feel like if you just go for something really obvious, then it's just, like, too easy. So I try and find some quite obscure things to ask. But what Christmas song does a woman at the gig ask Ruby and her friends to play? Ruby and her friends are in a band.
They're remember the gig. Scene, yeah. And I remember the woman shouting out, but I didn't take in what she said. So I'm going to guess it's... Just choose a random Christmas song. Fairy Tale of New York.
Very close, I would say. It's Gaudete. I don't know.
Don't know that one. Okay.
But, yeah, it's kind of not too far removed, but yeah, like... Gaudete, apparently.
Fair enough.
Which is a bit more boring than Fairy Tale of New York. It would be cool if she did ask for Fairy Tale of New York, but then they would probably know that one. So that's that's kind of the point. But yeah, I thought it was nice to see kind of a little bit of background to what the companion gets up to in their free time. So
here's a ridiculous piece of trivia: that woman who shouts out at the gig is played by the same actress who was Isaac Newton's housekeeper in Wild Blue Yonder. And that's probably just absolutely coincidence. It was whatever actor was available. But the actress is called Susan Twist.
Ooh.
And
that's,
you know,
a really cool
ridiculous
name.
Theory. The twist is going to be she turns out to be Susan.
That is actually... it is a very outlandish theory, but that would actually be really cool if it was true.
I mean, well, it's just the actress's real
name.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, I don't think it is, but like that would be really cool if it did happen. Like that would kind of be the most dramatic twist they'd ever managed to pull off if it did happen.
They've built an entire story arc around this actress's name.
literally, that's so cool. I love that. I love little pieces of trivia like that. It's interesting. And finally, question number 8, how many kids do we find out that Carla has fostered?
It's around 33.
It is 33.
Oh, wow.
Well done. 33, nice. Exactly.
Phew.
Yeah, Lulubell is their 33rd child.
Great.
So yeah,
excellent.
So I did love that with Lulabelle as well, the whole running joke about it being a terrible name and then the Doctor really liking it. I thought that was great.
Yes. I love how enthusiastic the Doctor is about things. It's terrible,
it's a
taste
great
in names.
Name. And then they're like Ruby and her mum just like, "Oh, it's an absolutely terrible name." That was great. I did like that. It was quite nice to see sort of representation of Foster. I wonder how accurate it is to the way that foster parents are called upon, because I know foster parents can be called upon at really short notice. So it was quite nice to have that representation of, you know, the social worker arriving with the baby and everything. But I wonder how accurate that kind of relationship that they have with the social worker actually is. But it was quite nice to see.
Yeah. I wouldn't know personally, but I'd assume that they've done some research, and it is nice that there does seem to be in this new era kind of an impetus to show different kinds of family. So
yeah.
Like at the end of the giggle, you have the 14th Doctor settling down with what's essentially like a found family, with, you know, the noble family plus Auntie Mel.
Yeah.
Seeing each other as a family. That's a kind of a very like queer adjacent concept. And then we've got the foster family in here. It's just, it's showing a nice diversity of human life.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's nice to, because we have had representation in terms of, in the Sarah Jane Adventures, Luke being adopted and then Clyde, having a difficult time with his parents separating and his dad not being there. So we have had some kind of representation of that kind of thing in the Doctor Who universe. But yeah, it's quite nice to quite explicitly see you know, a family that's more centered around fostering and adoption. I thought that was really nice.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, and the fact that it's essential, like, key to the story as well. It's not just a side thing that gets referenced.
Yeah, and I hope we see more of Ruby's family, because that is really cool. Right, I think that brings us to the end of the quiz. I think you got, I think it was 6 out of 8.
That's good.
a pretty decent score, yeah.
I think
that's been possibly our highest score. Oof. So that's, very impressive. Well done. I think you should be pleased with yourself for that.
I am.
Yeah. And that brings us on to...
Who Knew?
Yes, Who Knew? The section where we talk about any Doctor Who news, any theories, thoughts, controversies, anything that's going on in the Doctor Who world. And I think the main news for this episode, I think, is basically just the trailer for the new series and everything that we've found out about what's potentially going to happen in those episodes.
Yeah, so there was a little, about 30-second trailer, which aired after the Christmas special, and it's on iPlayer as well. And it doesn't give a massive amount away in terms of what's going to happen in the story, but it shows us a few of the different places that the Doctor and Ruby are going to visit. I think the big exciting thing we saw, which kind of had been rumoured for a while, but the trailer confirms it, is that there's an episode set in the 1960s, and they go to Abbey Road Studios and the Beatles make an appearance. And I think that's the episode with Jinx Monsoon in as well as the villain.
That's going to be really cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It does seem to be, you know, Russell T. Davies always had like a sort of celebrity historical near the start of a series. So it's going, you know, a bit more to that kind of story, but possibly with more musical elements. We'll wait and see. And then we've also seen what else was in the trailer. So there was clips of the Regency episode with Jonathan Groff.
That looked interesting.
Yeah,
because that looked like it could potentially, literally, from, I'm saying this from 2 seconds in the trailer, but that actually potentially looked like there could be a hint of a potentially kind of romance between the Doctor and Jonathan Groff's character.
Okay,
kind of like, I'm literally, as I say, I'm literally getting this from 2 seconds in the trailer, so I may be completely wrong, but just from like their facial expressions and the way that they were like looking at each other and everyone else in the room is kind of staring at them, it looks like it could potentially be a sort of like forbidden romance type thing where it's like, because of the time period, it's kind of, they can't be sort of explicit. Like, obviously, a little bit like, you know, the girl in the fireplace.
Yeah.
Where the Doctor is kind of obviously attracted to Renette, to Madame de Pompadour, and there's a kind of semi-romance, but obviously nothing actually happens because it's the Doctor and then he's off again. And I thought it looked like it could potentially be slightly similar to that, only there might be thrown in like a little subplot of like, because of the time period and it's two men, so, you know,
I did not pick up on that, but okay.
I mean, as I say, literally 2 seconds, so I might be completely wrong. But
I think he's meant to be the villain as well, because he has this kind of space gun at some point, doesn't he?
Okay, that might, yeah, I might be reading it completely wrong.
I mean,
wrong,
you know, there could be a romance, but then he turns out to be evil. That'd be some tragedy for you. You'd like that.
To be fair, that could work. That could be interesting. But yeah, no, I didn't realize that. So possibly I'm just completely barking up the wrong tree then.
if
he's meant to be the villain of the episode. But I definitely thought, from what I saw, it just kind of looked like there was some, I don't know. But we'll see what happens with that, because I thought that it kind of reminded me of, I don't know whether it's just like wishful thinking on my part, because it kind of reminded me of, you know, that episode of Torchwood where Captain Jack meets the real Captain Jack, and then there's that kind of, that's what I was thinking of. Like, it kind of reminded me of that episode of Torchwood where it's like a gay romance in the 40s basically, and then it's like, not a romance in the sense of anything long or drawn out, but just like they're attracted to each other for that episode, and then obviously the Doctor goes on his way or something, you know. So it's like, But who knows? I might be completely wrong.
We'll find out in May or June or whatever it is. Oh, the trailer just confirmed that the new series starts in May, which we didn't know beforehand.
Yeah, which is good.
Exciting. The other thing which is in the trailer is we had a shot of Rose returning. As in Yasmin Finney Rose, not Billy Piper Rose.
Yes.
Which, again, that had been rumoured, but it's great to see she's back because I thought that was a great character.
Yep.
And, she seems to be... There's a shot of her which seems to be in the UNIT base. So yes. I don't know how she's going to be involved in UNIT or in a story which sees them all taken to UNIT again.
Yeah, well, I mean... Kate did offer Donna a job at UNIT, and then we know that Mel already works for UNIT, and Mel is now Auntie Mel, Mad Auntie Mel. So maybe she's just kind of following in her mom and Auntie Mel's footsteps and kind of helping out at UNIT. Who knows?
Just take your kid to work day.
Take your kid to work day.
Which you'd think, a secret military organization probably shouldn't have.
But, yeah, you'd think they'd be a bit more discreet. I feel like UNIT are a little bit kind of in your face, but yeah. That'll be nice to see her back, and Mel again is returning, which will be nice to see more of Mel. But then I also think it's a strange situation now because we've got the companion support group, and they all know each other now. So it kind of feels like if one of the old companions turns up, it kind of feels like they should all turn up because like then they all know each other now, and they all. Keep up at the companion support group. Presumably they've got each other's number.
Yeah.
So it kind of feels like they should all just come every time one of them meets, like finds the doctor, it kind of just feels like they should all come running to come and see the doctor. So it's a bit like, obviously that's not going to happen, but it's like...
They might all be busy with other things, you know?
Yeah.
Tegan's, off traveling around the world like she
was
in
Power of the Doctor or whatever, Australia, I think.
In Australia, the Brigadier's in Peru. Oh, no, when UNIT first returned and they had to say, oh, he's in Peru all the time. Yeah, I know he is dead now, but
I mean, it's interesting because I kind of feel like at some point it would be really nice, like, because obviously they're probably only going to be able to do it once because of the filming restrictions of the actors and actor schedules and things, but I kind of feel like it would be a really good opportunity at some point. They should do an episode where it is like all of the companions or like as many as they can get. And they kind of have like the doctor crashes the companion support group essentially. And they solve a problem all together. Like they could have like a big finale episode at some point where like all of the companions show up and it's like, because it would be difficult, but they could probably do it once, so
everyone who's available and within budget.
Yeah,
I think maybe the Power of the Doctor was the closest we're going to get to that.
I mean, because they kind of have already done it with that in a sense, but it'd be nice to see them all have like a more of a role and not just have a cameo at the end. They're all kind of running around doing their thing or whatever. It would be difficult, but hopefully.
But it's definitely nice to have Mel back as a recurring element, and as we were saying when we talked about the giggle, to have her have a proper role in UNIT as their computer person.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's definitely nice to have that kind of continuity and see some of the old companions. Were there any other interesting bits from that trailer? I feel like there was some other interesting...
Those were the key bits that stick in my mind.
Yeah.
It was, a lot of shots of the Doctor and Ruby in close-up with maybe something going on in the background out of focus.
there's a limit to how much you're going to be able to tell from a teaser trailer like that. But yeah, some interesting bits and bobs to look forward to anyway. I think while we are on the subject of the new series as well, we should... this section is dedicated to theories, news, controversies. So I think we should go into some theories on... Who on earth is Mrs. Flood? Who is she, people?
I don't know. I've seen a lot of people comment, oh, she's the Rani, she's River Song, she's whatever. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen people saying that they think that she's going to turn out to be related to Amy and River because flood, because pond, she's got a water river, theme like, because she's got a water themed name. But I mean, obviously, that is a tenuous connection.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to build a whole story arc leading up to a twist that you have to get a reference from 13 years ago to understand.
Yeah.
I don't think that's how it's been.
13 years? Oh my god, that genuinely makes me feel so old. It has as well. Oh my god. It has been like 12, 13 years since eight. Oh, that's actually horrific. That makes me feel so old. But yeah, no, that's, I feel like that's obviously probably going to be a bit too contrived. But I have a theory that she might be, okay, so I definitely think she might be a Time Lord.
Okay.
Because, or she at least is somebody who knows what a TARDIS is.
Yeah.
But I don't think she knows necessarily who the Doctor is, because what confused me is that she didn't seem to recognise the TARDIS until it took off, and then she seemed to recognise that it was a TARDIS.
Unless she was just playing dumb, pretending not.
She was just playing dumb, but like, because it seemed like she recognised that it was a TARDIS, but she didn't recognise that particular TARDIS, which was interesting. So, I mean, there's all sorts of, obviously, she might just be like a, she might be a new character, potentially. I mean, she might just be a new character that turns out to be a villain, who knows. But if they're going to make her a character that already exists, then potentially, I can't tell whether she's going to be good or evil. But if she's good, possibly Susan?
Maybe, yeah.
Because I'm just thinking, like, if she's a Time Lord, then...
There's the Susan twist.
I mean, I wouldn't be overly surprised if they brought back Susan because I feel like she isn't a character that could easily be brought back because she's obviously, you could just have somebody new play her and say that she's regenerated.
And she's a character who's easy enough to explain. Like, she's the Doctor's granddaughter.
Yeah.
You don't need to know much more than
that. Yeah, you don't need to go massively into it. So it's like, I feel like if they are going to bring back a Time Lord and they don't want it to just be like a Time Lord villain, then I feel like having Susan back would be quite interesting. So she could potentially be Susan, or she could obviously be the Rani, as some people have been saying, or she could be, maybe she's the Master again, but then I feel like that might be a bit too obvious if she's just another female Master that we're not.
I mean, there's been, I don't know. Every time the Master has come back, there's been a twist that a character set up as someone else has turned out to be the Master. And like, I feel that there's only so many times you can do that specific twist.
Yeah, that's the thing. I just feel like, particularly as they've already revealed that she's not all that she seems. So I feel like they've already kind of given away that she's like, a character that's got more to her and she's not who she says she is.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a bit too obvious if they then just go, oh, she's the Master. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's more likely she'll be a new character who's, you know, in some kind of elemental character like the Toymaker, maybe. But a new twist on that.
Maybe.
I don't know. I think we'll find out in a lot of time. I do have a theory on Ruby's mother.
And
maybe not Ruby's mother, but I think the woman who we see drop off the baby is going to turn out to be Ruby herself.
Oh, yes. I have seen people saying that. That would make a lot of sense, to be fair. I feel like that would be quite a good twist, like that Ruby has to like complete the timeline. And
Complete the loop. That would feel quite satisfying, I think.
So. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see who shows up. Because we've got quite a few mysteries now, and they might all turn out to be the same person, or it might turn out to be, because we've got, who is the Meep's boss? Because obviously we had the Meep mentioned having an evil boss.
Yeah, so I thought that was going to be the Toymaker at the time, but then it wasn't that.
So we've got who is the Meep's boss? We've got who is the one that waits? Like, who the heck is the Toymaker afraid of? That's what I'm worried about. If the Toymaker's scared of them, then who the hell are they? Like, so we've got who is the Meep's boss? Who is the one that waits? Who is Mrs. Flood? And also, Is the master going to turn up at some point? Because we know he's alive. Yeah. So it's like...
And who is Ruby's mother? So that's five different...
And who is Ruby's
five
mother?
Different
so it's
things.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So it might all condense into one and it turns out that, you know... But then...
I think if Mrs. Flood was Ruby's mother, that feels like that would be a little bit too obvious.
Yeah, yeah. That would be... I mean, I think certainly the toy makers... The one that waits is not the master, because the master was trapped in the toy maker's gold tooth and the toy maker wasn't afraid of him. So we've definitely got... There's definitely somebody new in the game who might turn out to be both the Meep's boss and the one that waits, and could be Mrs. Flood, we don't know. But or there might be multiple new people that show up, but there's a lot of different mysteries anyway, so... It depends how many of them are going to be answered by the same person and how many of them are going to be like different people. So I don't know.
Yeah. And you know, it could be a while until we find out. It could be that those are story arcs that are going to be over a few series, because, you know, we know they're filming the second Shooty Getwa series at the moment. And I think they've got at least one more planned.
Which I do think it's a little bit bold to be filming the second series before you've even seen the fan reaction to the first series. Like,
they should never change anything based on fan reaction.
I mean, sometimes though, I think they shouldn't to an extent, but I actually sometimes think that you do kind of tailor your writing. If you put out a series and then all of the fans are saying X about it, or like X about it, then you might tweak your scripts to say, oh, everyone seems to want that to happen, like that everyone seems to want that conclusion to that story, so let's not do this totally random thing that we were planning to do that now doesn't make any sense because the series has evolved as it's gone along. You know, like that, I think you need to wait and see how the series actually evolves on its own, because sometimes it goes in a completely different direction to what you were expecting, and then if you're like three series ahead, it will then turn out to be a really ridiculous... It's a bit like How I Met Your Mother, when, you know, they got Robin and they made Robin, you know, and Ted get together at the end because that's what they'd always been planning to do since series one, but so much had happened since series one that by the time they got to that very final episode and put Robin and Ted together, it didn't make any sense anymore, and everyone hated it as an ending because it too much had happened, too much had evolved since then that it wasn't logical anymore.
I don't think that's because they're not paying attention to fans. That's just not having the writing all planned out properly.
It's more about not having, but it's like, I think it also kind of gets altered by fan reaction as well, and sort of various factors play into... Suddenly you realise that a series needs to go in a different direction to what you had initially thought. So it's like, I think it's a bit of a risk to be too many series ahead, I think. I don't know.
I'm not sure I agree from that perspective. It maybe can be a risk in terms of if they want to put topical things into it. Russell T. Davies likes adding sort of modern satire into his stories, which is, you know, a really strong element of his writing. It does feel like if you're writing a bit more for something more immediate, then you can put a bit more of that in. But yeah, I think it's good that there is a long-term plan, and it's good that, you know, that he started writing this series knowing what was going to happen in the next series and knowing that he definitely had a second series.
It allows you
to sort of spread things out a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's good to have a long-term plan, definitely.
Chris Chibnall did a bit of that, sort of adding stuff in based on the reaction. Like, he added Yaz being attracted to the Doctor in because people were reading that from Mandip Gill's performance.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm glad that he added it in, but you could tell it was sort of added in.
Yeah. but then it wouldn't necessarily feel like that if you pick up on something that fans are saying very early on, then I think you can then kind of alter it and it doesn't look like you've rushed it at the last minute. It depends like when in proceedings you pick up on that, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah. You know, TV takes a long time to make.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it just depends. But I think we've got a lot to look forward to anyway. And I think they have obviously, it sounds like they have obviously thought it out, and they've got a long-term plan for what villains they want to to appear or to return or whatever. I'm interested to see the toy makers legions as well, whatever that's going to be. So it's like we've definitely got some interesting things to look forward to, which is good. Let's see what you guys thought. You've been sending in your reactions to the episode, your theories on Mrs. Flood. So let's see what you guys have to say about it.
Okay, so Rylan Cavell says it was a fun romp, a breath of fresh air, and perfectly Christmassy, balancing its amounts of gravity / mavity and whimsy nicely. Alan Boone says it was slight but delightful. Neil Cole's Adventures in Science Fiction Museum of Sci-Fi on Facebook, well done, you've managed to get a plug for your museum into this, says, as a lover of sci-fi, it wasn't my cup of tea, but I guess if you've been after Harry Potter Camp Who hybrid, you'll be loving it, all down to personal taste. Yeah, that's kind of what we were talking about.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily see the Harry Potter in it, but definitely fantasy elements.
Yeah.
John Emson said there was a lot to like, but it didn't maintain the high bar set by the previous three specials. Two things didn't land for me. First, the sequences with the goblins came over like an episode of The Muppet Show.
But a little bit harsh.
Yeah. And secondly, he feels Ruby's reaction to the weirdness of the Doctor was underwritten, and she seemed mildly confused before accepting with a shrug.
I was going to say, I do feel like the, not necessarily Ruby, but I did feel like the Ruby's family was a little bit kind of blasé about the Doctor just randomly being in there. Like, I know they kind of said that he's a Doctor who's meant to be there to check up on Lulabelle, and he's meant to be like part of social services. But he kind of, as usual, like things get weird and then he starts going off on his technobabble, and it becomes pretty clear pretty quickly that he's not just a doctor from social services there to look after Lulabelle. And it kind of Ruby, I don't think Ruby's reaction to him was necessarily unrealistic, but I thought her family's reaction to him was a little bit underwritten and not very realistic.
Compared to
some that we've seen in the past.
I guess her family never really see the Hutts, the TARDIS, or any of the real fantasy things. Like, they never see the goblins, so...
Yeah.
All they really see is there's a man in their flat who says he's a doctor.
Yeah. But then, as I say, like, he does start acting very weird and spouting technobabble, running around. It's clear there's something else going on that they're not being taught. And then the whole scene where, you know, Ruby disappears and then he's, like, questioning her, and, like, you would kind of be thinking, why is this guy telling me that I had an adopter? I don't know, like, it wasn't the most unrealistic ever, but it was, like, there were points when I was like, that's not how you would behave in that scenario. That's not what you would say in that situation. You'd be a lot more, who the heck is this? Like, you know, I don't know. Certain moments I thought was a little bit too kind of obviously a TV script, not realistic enough to real life. But I think mostly it worked.
Yeah, there wasn't as much as there sometimes is in, like, the companion introductions episodes of the Doctor telling the companion about themselves, and, you know.
Yeah.
As we said earlier, the scene at the end felt quite cut off where, you know, she enters the TARDIS, and if you want new viewers to come to start the show with this episode, there wasn't quite as much explaining the concept in there as sometimes you might have.
Yeah.
Then maybe that'll continue on in the next episode.
Yeah, so, yeah, possibly. I think it just depends, really, doesn't it, on but I don't know. I think I definitely thought the script could have been better, so I would agree with what he's saying mostly.
Some others. Fraser says it was a thrilling, adventurous start to the 15th and Ruby's era, full of heart, swagger and confidence, can't wait for the full series. Mark Palmer disagrees. He says absolutely terrible. He's a man of few words, is Mark Palmer. Vince Bishop said he really enjoyed it. A lot of fun, a very promising start. And Shooty and Millie clearly have great chemistry. Bodes well for the future. Such a shame we have to wait until May.
Yeah. I would say, I don't know. What are your thoughts on Shooty, actually? Because I've realised we haven't actually said that much about what we thought of Shooty as, you know, the Doctor and his first kind of appearance as the Doctor. I'm kind of in two minds, because half of me really loves him and thinks he's really great, and then part of me is like, I feel like he's almost a bit too cool to be the Doctor and a bit too like well-dressed and well-put-together and cool and like swaggery to be the Doctor. I feel like the Doctor needs to be a bit more awkward. I don't know.
He's playing it the opposite to how Matt Smith played it in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I like it. I love him. I like that he's very full of joy, and it feels like that's directly following on from, you know, David Tennant having all this, the weight of the universe on him in the specials, and then having to have this therapy and family time, and as they described it, and the 15th Doctor come out of this without all the baggage. That's nice to see for a change.
Yeah.
He's a Doctor who he engages a lot in quite, you know, joyous, sensual things about life, like dancing and clothes and just being quite cheery and flirty with everyone he meets. And
yeah,
I like that. I think it's bringing an exciting energy to it. And I think he's a really charismatic actor who's pulling it off really well.
Yeah.
And he also does still have a bit of the authority, and he's someone you believe he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's he's definitely different. And I'm not, I think good different, but it's kind of hard to tell at this early stage. Like, for example, I never thought that I would hear the Doctor call someone babes and it work, but it kind of works with him.
Yes.
And no other Doctor could get away with that. Like, no other Doctor could call somebody babes and it work, but it kind of works with him. And I don't know, I feel like it's, I'll be interested to see what he does going forward, because I kind of feel like I still haven't really got a full sense of what his Doctor's going to be like, but I don't know.
Yeah, I love that he's playing it kind of queer, like the babes thing, and also like in the giggle. I hated the thing with the giant mallet, but the fact that he said, "You get a prize, hun."
Yeah,
just such a perfect delivery.
Yeah, no, it's good, and I think it also depends on like overuse as well. Like if they overuse that, then I think it will start to grate on me. But I think if they use it sparingly, if that's just kind of a part of his personality that's like sprinkled in every now and then I think if he's like constantly going around calling people babes every 5 seconds and like very kind of overplaying it, then I think it might start to grate. But I think I think it can work if it's an interesting new take on the Doctor, definitely.
Yeah, and I liked the scenes towards the start where we saw him sort of hanging around, you know, presumably he's tracking the goblins and sort of hanging around at the back of Ruby's gig and then saving them from that giant hanging snowman. I thought that was a nice way to introduce him as a bit of mystery about him there.
Yeah, yeah. No, definitely. What other comments have we got?
I think those are the main ones. Okay, Mark R. Ritchie says, Shooty and Millie both knocked it out of the park. The chemistry between them was so electric, you could almost see the sparks. The plot itself was thin, obviously just a vehicle to introduce Ruby and her circumstances, but it was a fun episode overall.
Yeah, I think that sums it up quite nicely, to be honest. That kind of rounds up the episode. I would agree with that, really. I think I definitely liked the relationship between the Doctor and Ruby. I thought they already have quite a lot of chemistry and work quite well together. I'll be interested to see what their relationship's like going forward, because I don't think it's going to be a romance.
Oh, no.
Some people were predicting it might be more, they might go back to doing a more like Rose type thing, where it's, because they haven't really done like a romance between the Doctor and companion for a while in a way. But like, I know they did with Yaz and the Doctor, but I kind of feel like that didn't really go anywhere. So I don't know, some people were predicting that they were going to do a romance, but I think it's more of like a Donna type relationship, which I'm already enjoying.
I think there's more of a kind of mentor kind of relationship. There's definitely more of an age gap. Like, I don't think they would do a romance because there is the age gap. Like, Ruby, she's meant to be like just out of her A levels, and she definitely looks younger than any companion we've had in the new series, I think. Like, actually, thinking about it, Rose probably was meant to be a similar age, but
I think they're both 19, yeah.
Yeah.
They're both meant to be 19.
Ruby kind of looks younger. She's clearly shorter than the Doctor, so I think they're going to stay away from that, which I'm kind of glad of, because they've just done the romance story with Yaz, and I think it kind of has been done for a while now.
Yeah. But then there was that kind of weird, slightly flirty, like, relationship between them at first when she, like, sees him in the club. And I thought that was quite a good way to sort of introduce his doctor. I really liked seeing him in a club because it definitely sets a precedent for, like, this being a very different doctor if he's, like, going clubbing for fun and he's, like, dancing, you know, with a load of young people in a club. Like, I think that's a very bold move to show what kind of doctor he is. And then, like...
And as much as I love the 11th Doctor's giraffe dance at Amy and Rory's wedding, this one is definitely the better dancer.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think... But again, that was one... I liked it, but then that was also one of those moments where I was, like, a bit like, ooh, are we going a little bit too far away from who the doctor is, you know, like the doctor dancing in a club, that's a big step, you know, like that's a big kind of move away from like what the doctor used to be. But I guess again it just comes down to individual doctors, and it can work, because obviously if next time we have another doctor like Peter Capaldi's doctor, then obviously he's not going to be in a club. But if we have a doctor like Shuti Gatwa's doctor, then maybe he does want to go to a club. So, you know, but I guess none of the doctors up till now have been the type that would do that. So part of me kind of felt a little bit like, is this going away from the character a bit too much? But then, well, I don't know.
A lot of them have had some kind of musical element, like Capaldi's doctor had his guitar and used to strut around playing that.
That is very true.
Troughton had a recorder.
No, that is true. That's very true. So yeah, I think I'll be interested to see more of Shuti anyway, because I feel like it's very hard to get a good sense of the Doctor from like their first episode. So we will see what we have to come. On that note, I think that brings us to the end of the episode. Thank you very much for joining us as usual. Hope you had a lovely Christmas and a very happy new year to you all. Thank you for listening. As usual, do feel free to get in touch, share your thoughts. We've got a bit of a wait until the series starts again in May, but we'll be keeping in touch via social media, and we're hoping that we might have a couple of special in-between episodes for you before the new series starts. So hopefully this won't be the last of us that you see until May, and we'll be keeping you up to date on social media. Keep on sharing your thoughts. We really like hearing from you. It's really interesting to hear all the different perspectives. Thank you very much for listening, and have a wonderful start to your 2024. Goodbye from me.
Yes, thank you for listening, and Happy New Year. Have a great 2024.
Bye, guys.